Welcome to Parents Perspective. Oh, come on, Mom. Everyone does it. That was 16-year-old Vinny's response to his mother's discovery of his fake ID, now a bit soggy from its trip through the washer. You, young man, his mom began, hearing to her surprise her mother's voice in her own, are not everyone. You are yourself, someone you'll have to live with your whole life. It's not hurting anyone, Mom. I'm really not doing anything bad with it. It just gets me into the rocker club and some spots like that where you have to have an ID. And why do you think they require IDs, Vinny? Are you comfortable breaking the law? Oh, Ma, why do you always make such an issue out of this stuff? From a parent's perspective, how can we best teach our kids right from wrong? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests are already well known for their field guide to the American teenager. Now they've come to talk with us about integrity. Mike Riera has worked in education since 1980 and is one of the country's foremost authorities on understanding children and teenagers. A popular speaker, he has appeared on numerous television shows and serves on the advisory board of Teen People magazine. He lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife and daughter. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Riera.
Thanks for having me.
Joe DiPrisco has worked as a teacher or administrator for more than 20 years in public, independent, and parochial schools, middle school through college. He's also an award-winning poet and novelist. He also lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife and son. We're glad you can be with us today, Dr. DiPrisco.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
What do you think is a parent's biggest hurdle in attempting to teach kids right from wrong?
Well, I think there are lots of ways to think about integrity that I think might derail us a little bit. That is, I think the traditional way to think about character formation or character education is to, you know, catch your kids doing something wrong and then explaining what's wrong and then punishing them and making them feel guilty about it. You know, there's a time and place for a lot of this kind of stuff. In this book, Right from Wrong, we want to put integrity in a bigger envelope. Integrity is very different from honesty. If adults can think about this for a second, they'll realize there are all kinds of occasions when being dishonest is a way to keep your integrity. Huckleberry Finn broke the law, a great liar, and why did he do it? To keep his integrity. Your friend is drinking too much. You take her car keys. It's time to go home. She says, "Where are my car keys?" You say, "I don't know. Here's the guest room." In other words, it gets more complicated. So in the course of our conversation today, we're probably going to define and redefine integrity over and over again. But here's a starter. Integrity is about wholeness and about authenticity. Therefore, it's not just about the things kids do wrong. It's about the way kids form themselves. It's the way the kids find themselves. And it's not only in those moments when they make mistakes or do something wrong. It's when they're playing. It's when they're in friendship. It's when they fall in love. It's when they go into puberty. It's when they start school. These pivotal experiences, these crucial experiences in their lives are occasions for them to form the wholeness that they are. And where parents come in is to be alongside them, supporting them, urging them, pushing them, asking them over and over again to come to terms with their own integrity.
I would say that probably the biggest mistake parents make and the biggest temptation is that we think we can download the integrity into them. You know, it's like just open the computer, download, there you go, you got it, we're set. I've given you all the lectures, I've talked to you about the values, I've told you all about my mistakes so you can learn from my mistakes, but it doesn't work that way. Kids need that. They need to hear from us on all these important issues. They need to know that we've got values that we stand for and principles that mean something to us. But integrity is forged from within, which means you have to understand failure and mistakes in a different way. Nobody can learn to appreciate integrity without making mistakes along the way. So in some ways, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card that our kids are going to make mistakes, and as parents, we should expect imperfection in our kids. And those are the moments when we take these sort of intellectual ideas of principles and values and bring them home, and bring them home right to the kids. And what we have to start doing is asking them a different set of questions that helps them. I mean, I think the way we look at it is, when they do something wrong, they make a mistake, they know right away that we're disappointed in them. They can read it in our face before we ever open our mouths. Our challenge is to get them to see not only did they disappoint us, but they also disappointed themselves. And when they do that, their integrity starts to grow exponentially.
Yeah, another mistake might be that we confuse integrity with compliance. And this is very dangerous, I think. I think we want our kids to be able to argue with us, to take us on. A home without conflict is a strange home, and it's probably not a healthy home. We want a home where our kids feel free to challenge our assumptions, to and for us to challenge their assumptions, too. It's reciprocal. And we want to be able to mix it up with our kids. They are in the world. They're trying to find themselves in the mix, in the gray light of changing circumstances. So for all these reasons, you know, it's hard to come up with prescriptions. It's hard to say, well, these are the 10 things you need to do. These are the things you need to say. You can't do that. We are not moral relativists, but we're probably moral contextualists. That is, in the context, there is a better, smarter, wiser, more tolerant thing to do. But I think if parents, we get hung up, I think, trying to get the script down. When we see our 7-year-old knock some kid down on the schoolyard or try this first incident of cheating or something, we might say, oh my God, what's going to happen when she's 16, you know? Shotgun weddings or whatever, we'll see. You know, we see running away from home. Well, we need to not panic.
I think you're reassuring a lot of parents right now.
Yeah, and that goes to the hugest question that we face when we're raising our children. Well, what's going to happen when they're teenagers? We wrote Right from Wrong because by the time you're an adolescent, it's too late to parent your teenager. You actually begin a lot earlier. So when you're a younger child, when you're having these kinds of discussions, when you're taking on your folks and other adults, what you're doing is you're giving your kids, and your kids are taking advantage of exercising those decision-making muscles so they're not going to conform, so that they're going to please themselves, they're going to live up to their own ideals. That's our best bet when they're adolescents. In fact, that's the best game in town.
And it also challenges our integrity.
That's
I mean,
right.
Going to this story again, Vinny's mom had an experience I hear parents talk about all the time, is that when their kids are 2 or 3, it's the first time they actually hear their parents' words coming out of their mouth. You know, they hear,
yes,
I can't believe I just said that. And they're shocked and they're upset with themselves. Like, oh, I didn't mean to say that. And they're trying to come up with their own words. But then 10, 11 years later, when their kids are teenagers, all of a sudden, their parents' words are coming out of their mouth, and now they believe them. You know, now their mom was right,
okay.
Dad was right kind of thing. So in this case, I could hear Vinny's mom sort of wrestling. She's hearing her parents' words come out of her mouth, and now her integrity is really a feeling when you're out of it. She needs to look at that and say, is this what I really believe, or am I doing this because this is what my mom did? And let's face it, all of us as parents, when our kids do something wrong, when we're worried about something, and we're in a rush in some way, we turn to lectures right away because we feel as if we're doing something when in fact we're not really doing a lot.
And it does come back when your kids are grown up.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about teaching children to sort out right from wrong.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Mike Riera and Dr. Joe DiPrisco about teaching right from wrong.
My son tells me when he wants to get me riled up, he says, well, Mom, I'm still running with scissors.
Oh, you know?
I love that one.
Well, but you raise a great point. That is, I think one of the requirements for our book is that you need to be an imperfect parent or an imperfect adult. And there might be one or two out there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, oftentimes when we talk about integrity or honesty or character, I think we send a message to parents and adults that, you know, somehow this is, you need to be perfect. And, you know, this is just not the case. It's not going to happen. It's impossible to conceive. And I think it's very helpful for a kid to have a flawed parent. At least that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Our children certainly don't
know anything else.
So that's what flaws are. I mean, it's about searching for integrity.
They see us wrestling, like we don't have all the answers. We're not perfect. It also means, and this is a really hard one for parents, is they call us on our imperfections. You know, they'll say, you know, Dad, you were saying about integrity and, you know, being whole and everything. And, you know, I just heard you on the phone and you said you couldn't go to lunch because you weren't feeling well, but you look like you're feeling fine to me. And we can't just say, oh, well, it's different in the adult world, this kind of thing. We have to sort of fess up to it and say, you know, maybe you got me here. I need to think about this some more. And we don't then pull them in to make them our therapists, but we let them see that when they are recognizing that we're out of integrity and we are out of integrity, it's accurate. This is called mirroring in psychology, that what they perceive the world is mirrored back to them in an accurate way. If we're out of integrity and deny it to them, then they learn not to trust themselves.
But take that very mundane, ordinary example. In fact, I heard you say that the other day to somebody when I knew you were. You know. Well, that was me, actually. Well, anyway, I mean, in these kinds of moments, what we're trying to say is, you know, my life is complicated. My life is complex, child. That's why I can't. Well, you know. It begins with our sympathetic imagination for our children's lives. And every one of these children has a story. Your child has a story. And it's a long one. And it's a deep one. And it's a beautiful one. And that story comes out in moments of wrongdoing. And it comes out in moments of brilliant insight and moments of play. And we need to be there in those moments when they are sort of searching for the answer to the question, who am I? Because this is really what it's all about. And if they answer that and they have a sense of their own integrity, well, then we can relax when we get, well, I'm not going to say we're going to relax when we get to adolescence, but we can be a little less anxious because finally, you know, you're not going to be in the car when the beer can gets open. You're not going to be there when the crucibles of sexuality or anything for that matter come into play. But your child in integrity is going to be there. You hope. That's our best bet.
Parents who are listening are thinking, okay, but now what do I do when I have a situation like the Vinny situation or a little kid situation, you know, taking the cookies or something else? And as we know, for little kids, truth and fabrication are very fuzzy and get sort of messed together. And how would you advise parents to deal with this?
Well, first, I want to say something about this phrase, teaching moments. I mean, it's a beautiful phrase, and it's widely misunderstood because most of us as parents take teachable moments to mean that's the moment we should step in and lecture them and tell them what to do or the right answer.
Easy.
And in fact, if you think back on your education and the teachers formally and informally you've had, the best teaching moments were when they asked you a question and were silent and waited for you to wrestle with the answer. And it's the same with our kids. And there's one other assumption we have, which is from our experience of working with thousands of kids, children know the right thing to do. They don't always do it. But they usually know the right thing to do. And once you take this, you know, on faith and you see it in your kids' lives, then you realize lecturing makes absolutely no sense because you're telling them something they already know. So you're better off, let's say it's a 7-year-old who steals a candy bar and he's raised in your family. No one in family steals. He knows this is wrong. You're better off sort of coming to the side, you know, yes, you've caught him, there's going to be a consequence, there absolutely has to be that. But now the question is, you know, Vinny, when you did this, was there some part of you that said, shouldn't be doing this? This is a bad idea? And most kids will sort of look around the room, roll their eyes, scuff their feet, and then go, well, yeah. And then you go, now, here's the thing that concerns me. Why aren't you listening to this part of yourself, the part of you that knows the right thing to do? What gets in the way? And now all of a sudden, he won't be able to answer that at first. And as a parent, this is where we sit expectant and silent and wait for him to come forward. And it may be that he gets this extreme look of confusion and you say, well, you think about that for a while and we'll talk after lunch. And he will slowly start to come up with answers to this. And what we're doing is turning the focus back on him. The beauty of this is that you do this at 7, at 8, at 9. When he's 16 and 17, he will now trust you. And you can be around more. He doesn't have to push you as far away because he knows you're not going to try to micromanage his life. What you're going to try to do is help him manage his life better by turning the focus back to him and recognizing that living a life is a complex thing. And every time we give them a simplistic answer to something they're going through, we undermine the complexity of it and we undermine their growing sense of independence, which becomes so important as teenagers.
At the same time, when you're parenting for integrity, you're parenting with integrity and you're parenting in integrity. And for somebody like Vinny in his circumstances, I mean, to say something like everybody does it, which is, I guess he tried, you know, that's not going to fly.
And it's what every teenager says.
Right, but it's not going to fly. It's not going to fly. In fact, even they don't believe that it's going to fly. They're going to try. Will this one work today?
It's worth a shot.
Well, we found the best thing that our kids used that they thought was their pièce de résistance was, oh, come on, Mom. I mean, that was like, you couldn't, how could you top that as
you're
a really good reason?
You're overanalyzing this.
That's right.
There are teachable moments all the time in our kids' lives. I mean, they sort of, you can't avoid them. And it's a high art parenting, therefore, to know when to speak, when to be silent, when to be there, when to play basketball with them, when to cook with them, when to do something with them, when to take them on a trip. Because what you're doing is you are being alongside them in their play. And for us, you know, play is so crucial. And,
yeah.
You know, people immediately get solemn and ridiculously dull when they start talking about play. And I'll probably be the next person to do it. But, I mean, there's a kind of manic, wonderful, out-of-controlness to play when kids are playing that is a real key to their integrity.
Play is all about engagement. That's
and relationship,
it's not about outcomes. It's
that's
just
right.
about engagement, and that's so important for kids.
And integrity is not very outcome-based.
No.
Yeah, you can't. You're not going to get a foundation grant about integrity. You're not going to be able to list the outcomes that are going to happen
but
here.
But there are other moments of integrity besides when they do something wrong. I was in a store recently, a toy store, and a mom and her daughter walked in. The daughter was probably 9 years old, and I just, for some reason, I saw them coming in and watched them, and the daughter was carrying a brown bag with a little stuffed animal in it. And I could see her sort of building up for a big moment. She was going to take a risk here. And I could see her eyeing the cashier for which one she was going to go to. And it became clear after a while that she was returning something and wanted to exchange it. And she was ready to initiate the discussion. And she came up. She picked the cashier that looked the most friendly and the most open. And she walked up to her. She started to take the deep breath to speak. And her mom just jumped in front of her and said, "Oh, my daughter got this at a party, and she just wants to return it for something else. She has one of them already. Can she do this?" And the clerk said, "Sure, just go get it." And I watched the daughter just deflate and sort of slogged over, scuffing her feet all the way, got something, and they walked out. And to me, that was just one of these moments that, you know, maybe her daughter wasn't capable of doing this all the way up until that day. And maybe the next day she wouldn't be capable of. But that day she was. And one of the things as parents we need to do is continually reevaluate our children. And when they're ready for this, the girl wouldn't have been ready to do this if the mom had stayed in the car and said, "Go in and do this." She needed mom's presence, and she needed the reassuring look to look back at mom. But the mom missed that opportunity. Instead, the daughter just deflated because she could have grown right there. So one of the things that comes of this is parenting for integrity is very effective, but it's very inefficient. It takes time. You know, that mom may have just had to get out there to meet her, and she just needed to do this in a hurry, and she knew if her daughter did it, it was going to take twice as long, but the payoff would have been enormous in
and
that case.
And she taught her, I didn't think you could do this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's basically
it. Which
is
so sad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We wanted to ask you a little bit more about play. In your book, Right from Wrong, you deal with play, but what's so important about play and integrity? I mean, all children play. Let's talk about it a little more.
Piaget said the work of childhood is play. Adults sort of turn that around sometimes and think that the play of childhood is work, I guess. And maybe that is. Maybe that is true. I mean, play is about giving permission to experience joy and to experience a little bit of being out of control, a little bit of purposelessness. We can overstructure our kids' lives. Downtime is so crucial for our children. We need to give them the opportunity to be by themselves, to struggle with the questions, to think about what's going on in their day. And not, you know, Mike was just talking about, you know, those teachable moments, not saying stuff. Well, it sort of goes to this. When your teenager comes home from high school and, you know, she's 16 years old and you say, "How was your day?" Well, you're not going to get the information right then. You're not going to. She's not going to say, "Well, you know, the tryouts for Romeo and Juliet went really well, and then we did quadratics, and then, yeah, I had a thank you so much for making lunch for me, and the principal was really nice," and you're not going to hear any of this.
You do write fiction, don't you?
That's science fiction. So when you think of a great book like Maurice Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are, I mean, what's that about? Little Max is in his wolf suit and he's acting up, being bad. And the mom says, "Okay, it's enough. You go to your room, get some discipline." What happens? Well, he's by himself. And in this sort of thicket of his imagination, you know, the wild things get summoned up. And what's this about? Well, it's the play of the search for himself. I mean, not that this is spelled out. The book is much more brilliant than that. But finally, he comes home. But he comes home through these figures of his imagination. Let the wild rumpus start. And that's where the figures come in. And then he comes home. And that's where dinner is waiting. And that's where we are. We're waiting with the dinner for them as they struggle by themselves, often, in fact, probably most of the time, to come to terms with who they are.
And think of adults you like spending time with. Really, think of the adults.
You guys,
book tours?
For sure.
Playfulness is one of the words that comes to mind probably for people you enjoy spending time with. And if you talk to those people, they have a great history of play in their lives. And you know, one of the things I hear a lot of complaints from parents about is my kid watches too much TV. And I see that as I hear that as another way of saying they're not playing enough. And sometimes kids will just go off and play on their own. Sometimes, you know, Joe and I talk about this a lot. There's a misconception about limits and structure in a kid's life, that there need to be limits and structure on one level to protect them from things, but also to let them learn the ultimate freedom. Because limits and structure force them to go inside and discover the freedom that's there all along. And play is the best way to get this. I mean, go and watch 8-year-olds playing on the playground. I mean, they have no sense of time. You know, they are intoxicated with one another. They're negotiating rules. They're learning about friendship. They're learning how to resolve conflict. They're learning empathy. They're doing all this is happening right on the playground. And at the end, you know, there's no measurable outcome or anything.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about teaching children to sort out right from wrong.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parent's Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Mike Riera and Dr. Joe DiPrisco about teaching right from wrong, also the title of their book.
If parents feel they've sort of missed the boat and they haven't been able to use the years that you're talking about, the young childhood years, as really integrity-building years or discovering years for their children, what advice would you give them?
Well, I would be very optimistic. There's no such thing as a lost opportunity. You can start all over again. For the overwhelming majority of kids, they're always available for that kind of conversation because they're always available to be in relationship with us. And I just make a very practical point. Some parents are a lot better with kids who are older. Some parents are more comfortable with kids who are younger.
Yeah. And I don't care if your kids are in their teenage years or in their 30s or 40s. It's never too late to start these kinds of conversations and engagement. And maybe one of the things that's most important to remember as a parent is on television and the radio and the newspaper, all the stories we tell have beginnings, middles, and endings. That's not what parenting's about. Parenting's all about middles. You know, you never see where the problem begins, and you really never see where it ends. You just see it in the middle. And you get your report card as a parent of a teenager about 10 years later when they're 23 or 24 and they come back home and say, you know, when I was 16 and you did this, that was a really good thing to do. But you don't get it in that moment. If you can start to get engaged, the beauty, I think, of teenagers and adolescents is when they see you really trying, you know, trying to do something different, trying to listen in a different way, then they're much more forgiving and they're much more compassionate. The simple thing, if a parent is struggling, thinking they're not doing it with their kids now, one simple thing I would recommend is the next time you're talking to your teenager, and you've got a nice conversation going, within about a minute, they will say something that will stir up a lot of anxiety in you. And you will feel like, oh, I really need to give them a talk now about this. That's the time to stop. Count to 10. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 9, 10 doesn't count. It's got to be slowly. At about 6, you will feel the ulcer forming. At around 9, all of a sudden, it will just go away. And you'll realize your son or daughter has been sitting there waiting for you. And if you continue to look at them, they will now come forward and say something else, which shows you they've been wrestling with this all along. And what they need more than anything is your presence. And many times we don't give enough value to our presence, to just looking at them expectantly, knowing that they'll work this out on their own, or that they've thought about it more than we think they've thought about it. But we have to give them the space and the attention to do this in.
It's so difficult to watch your kids suffer and to be in pain. You want to take that away. And I think when we reflect on our own experience, it's often about a lot of disappointment. And for children, it's no different.
Would you say there's such a thing as intuition on the part of parents?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's very important in a society. Our society is pretty litigious these days. And so, and there's a lot of television shows that capitalize on this. But as parents, we can't think this way. That if we wait for proof that our child is in over their head or doing something wrong, we're in trouble. We have to count on our intuition. You know, we believe there are three streams of knowledge that parents have that interweave in raising healthy kids. One is that intuition, that you know your child better than anyone else. You need to pay attention to it. Second is developmentally, what's going on with kids at different ages. That's why in the book, we sketch out the different ages quickly so people understand how a six-year-old is different than an eight-year-old. And the third is the focus on integrity, because it cuts across all the different parenting models. And you can use whatever model works for you, and integrity will work with that. Looking at these three things, it will always strengthen your intuition. And it means sometimes you can say to Vinny here, Vinny, you know, I know you're making light of this, but something really feels wrong with me. And I don't have the proof, but I'm really concerned about it. And for kids, for you to notice that they're out of integrity without being able to prove it, that's enough. We don't always have to prove it. Just noticing it is enough for kids. So we have to value that intuition that we have and capitalize on it and make use of it.
What resources would you suggest, besides your book, Right from Wrong, to help parents through this particular part of parenting that's so important?
Well, I don't know if this is an answer that you're looking for, but I would think that there's so much in the great stories and the literature that kids and families can learn from. I'm thinking, for instance, Charlotte's Web. What a great story that is. There's Wilbur, the little pig, who's saved by Charlotte, who weaves, you know, actually kind of an act of deception, putting words up there in the corner of the barn, you know, some pig. And, you know, this saves him from turning into bacon.
I would say his resources, the number one resource is other parents.
There you go.
If you think back when your kids were young, 2 and 3 years old, you would go to the playground and you would, the quintessential playgroup, and you would go up to a relative stranger who had another 2-year-old, and within minutes you were talking very honestly. Is he potty trained yet? How did you do this? How do you get him dressed in the morning? And everyone's sharing ideas, and it's beautiful. And within moments, 4 or 5 parents are there talking. As our kids get older, we need to use much more intention to create those playgroups for ourselves. And I think it's talking to other parents, getting their opinions. I think it's shows like this where parents can listen to it, talk to one another. Whether they agree or disagree with the people that are on the show is really irrelevant, because what matters most is they're digging in deeper to what they feel is important to parenting. And once that happens, I think they're off to the races. But never neglect the people right around you.
The art of parenting and the art of teaching, you know, kind of mentoring, they're not that different. We need to trust our intuition.
Well, you have given parents so much in just this small portion of time that everyone is going to walk away very much enriched from what you had to say. So Dr. Michael Riera and Dr. Joseph DiPrisco, thank you so much for being with us.
It's been great. Thanks,
yeah, thanks
a lot
for having us. This was wonderful. Yeah. Can't believe the time's over. We're just getting warmed
up. Us too. Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. And mention show 146. Tell us also, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors in Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.